Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to spend some time now talking about guns, 265 million of them, and who owns them. In a moment, we'll hear about dramatic fines from a new study from Northeastern University and Harvard about gun ownership across America. But first, let's hear from Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey, who has made the push for tighter gun laws a top priority. She became a national advocate on the issue, traveling to Washington to lobby Congress. And here at home, she's picked a number of fights with the gun industry, a couple of which have ended up in court. We sat down with her recently to talk about that and why this issue is so important to her.
Every day in this country, 90 Americans are killed at the hands of a gun. Another 200 are injured. This is a public health issue. If we saw the number of people dying in plane crashes or bus crashes every day that we do due to gun violence, I think people would be really, really upset about that and talking about it and, importantly, taking action. And frankly, we just have a patchwork system around this country. And as Attorney General, my job is to make sure that we're doing everything we can for public safety and public health. And that's why, for me, this is a priority.
You know, you mentioned, you used this term patchwork system that we have in this country. And part of the reason we have this patchwork system, as you know, is because there is no action in quite some time at the federal level. Whether there's shootings in Sandy Hook or Aurora, Colorado or San Bernardino, nothing happens at the federal level. I'm wondering if you feel frustrated by that and, you know, to what extent one state attorney general can sort of make up for that.
Well, I am thoroughly frustrated. The fact of the matter is the majority of Americans support common sense gun reform. It's simple as that. And what we need to do is get those who actually have the power to act, elected officials in Washington, to do what the majority now of American people want to see happen, which is common sense reform. This isn't about taking guns away from people. This isn't about an abrogation of Second Amendment rights. This is about public safety and public health. That's why the majority of Americans support things like common sense gun reform, and that's why I do as well.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up because this is something I really wanted to ask you about. I mean, it's true. If you look at the polling, most Americans sort of fall somewhere in the sort of broad middle where there's kind of a respect for the idea of gun rights, but there's also respect for, as you put it, a common sense gun control. But the debate, the political debate, never plays out that way. It seems like people go into these separate camps and just kind of stake out these positions. And either you're determined to take everybody's guns away, or you're a gun nut determined to let blood flow in the streets. And then there isn't a meaningful exchange of ideas or compromise or talk about how to resolve this. How do we get to that point?
And that's what's so frustrating, because this isn't about taking guns away from people. This isn't about restricting Second Amendment rights. This is about common sense reforms, things like universal background checks, things like no fly, no buy, things like ensuring that state, local, and federal agencies have a good way to share information to make sure that we're taking steps to keep guns out of the hands of those who are a danger to themselves or to others. The gun lobby has been able to drown out and silence and diminish the voices of the majority of Americans.
Well, I want to ask you about a couple of specific issues that you're involved with. You have launched an investigation into at least two gun manufacturers, Remington and Glock, looking into possible safety problems with their guns. What are the safety problems that you're aware of, that you're concerned about here?
There have been reports that some of these guns accidentally discharged. There have been misfirings. There have been injuries and death resulting from that. We look at consumer product safety issues all the time in our office, and this is just another instance where there's a consumer product out there, specifically the certain models of these guns made by, in this instance, Glock and Remington, and we want to make sure that they have the right policies in place and are taking the right steps to make sure that their weapons are safe.
So they've pushed back, right? I mean, they're actually suing in Suffolk Superior Court, arguing that your effort casts too wide a net, that you want too much information, that it's, they imply sort of a kind of political fishing expedition almost. What's your response to their pushback here?
Yeah, I find it outrageous and sad, frankly. We're asking questions because there have been reports of issues around consumer product safety. That's my job as Attorney General. This isn't political. I'm just doing my job.
Well, let me ask you about sort of specifically Glock. I mean, sales of Glocks to the general public are banned under Massachusetts state law. So why focus on this particular company in Massachusetts if sales of Glocks to private citizens are banned?
That is the law. But it seems that nearly 8,000 of these were sold last year in Massachusetts alone to civilians. We want to understand that. We want to understand how that happened. Glocks are turn up routinely in crimes here in Massachusetts, and we need to understand exactly what's going on with respect to the sale of Glocks and how they're getting into to the state. And so, you know, that's part of what we're looking at and what I want to have answers to.
Another big fight you waged against the gun industry earlier this summer. You moved to bar the sale of military-style assault weapons that had been altered slightly, so-called copycat assault rifles. Now, the gun industry, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, for example, is challenging this in federal court, arguing that it hurts law-abiding gun dealers because it sort of casts everyone under this dark cloud of suspicion.
That's baloney. I mean, for years, the standard line out of the gun lobby is, hey, law enforcement, regulators, we don't need new laws. What we do need you to do is just enforce existing law. And if you did that, that would end gun violence. That would deal with gun violence. And so, lo and behold, when I actually go to enforce the law, which here was specifically our state assault weapons ban, then they cry foul. So I am just doing what they told me to do, which is enforce existing state law. The fact of the matter is they're just interested in selling as many guns to as many people as possible under any circumstance possible. That's not good enough for me. The sale of that kind of weapon is actually banned under Massachusetts state law, but yet 10,000 of those very weapons were sold in this state last year alone.
And that's because, by making minor alterations, essentially creating these copycat guns, essentially you can get away with selling one.
That's exactly what they attempted to do. They made copycat versions of these assault weapons. They even went so far as to market on their website that these weapons were, quote, Massachusetts compliant. And the good news is that we're about 2 months out from that enforcement notice, and sales of those weapons have essentially stopped here in the state.
I want to get back to this idea of the sort of patchwork of laws and regulations that we have in this country. And one of the challenges that poses for Massachusetts is this is a state that has passed some of the strongest gun control laws in the nation. But very close to us are states that have much less rigorous laws, I guess it's fair to describe. What kind of challenge does that pose? And what do we do about it?
It's a significant challenge. This is why we need a federal solution around some of this. This is why we need to come together as a country and have certain reforms in place. Universal background checks, comprehensive exchange of information that will allow authorities in different states to understand what may have happened elsewhere and what this person who's requesting a license, you know, has for a history.
One of the things that seems to be difficult for people to get their heads around is that when you have a country with 300 million weapons already out there, and someone comes along and says, we've got to tighten up who gets access to guns, this is too little too late. There are 300 million weapons already out there. A lot of those are in the hands of the bad guys. So is it really going to make a difference to make it harder for law-abiding people to get their hands on guns? That's one of the arguments you hear.
Well, my response back is so your answer is to essentially allow an unlimited number of guns to be added to the mix? I mean, it is too little, but it's not too late. And I think we are at a time in our country, given what we've seen and given the prevalence of violence, given the nature of some of the gun violence that we've seen, we need to be doing everything we can to protect people. It breaks my heart. Yesterday, I was at a vigil for families who've lost loved ones to gun violence and homicide. And it is heartbreaking when you sit with these families and these mothers and these fathers and these sons and these daughters. I can't stand by and not do something. Let's focus on the reality, the fact that we got a problem with gun deaths and injuries each day. This is a public safety issue. The majority of Americans get it. And let's give voice to their very real concerns. There are solutions. There are things we can do. It's as simple as that. And that's where we're trying to take the conversation out of this office.
Attorney General Maura Healey, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Great to be with you.
All right. Let's turn now to a new study about gun ownership in the U.S. from Harvard University and Northeastern University. Here's a number that stands out. 265 million. That's how many guns are out there, according to the study. Enough for more than one gun for every American adult. But there are a couple of other intriguing finds in this study. Since 1994, the percentage of Americans who own guns has actually dropped a bit. But it also found that more guns are concentrated in fewer hands. About half the guns are now owned by just 3% of American adults, who own an average of 17 guns each. They're a small class of super gun owners. Joining us now is Dr. Matt Miller, co-author of the study, which is the most comprehensive gun survey in the U.S. in the last two decades. He's also a professor of health sciences and epidemiology at Northeastern University and the Harvard School of Public Health. And great to have you, Matt Miller. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for your interest.
So what does the average American gun owner look like according to this new survey? Is there an average American gun owner?
So gun owners are heterogeneous. There's not a single type that characterizes gun owners generally. But overall, gun owners are male. They tend to be middle-aged or older. They tend to be white. And they tend not to live in urban areas. You mentioned at the beginning of the show that about 8% of gun owners, or about 3% of the U.S. adult population, owns approximately half of all the firearms.
Yeah, what's the significance of that?
So I think that the significance of that is that it may well distract from another really important statistic, which is those 265 million guns are distributed across about one in every three households. Mm-hmm. The other statistic you mentioned, which was roughly 22% of American adults are personal gun owners.
22%. And that's down a little bit since 1994.
It's slightly down. In 1994, they estimated about 25%. Now we estimate about 22%. So there has been an increase in the concentration of gun ownership among slightly fewer adults who own slightly more guns on average, five as opposed to four. But the important point not to lose sight of is that one out of three American homes has a gun. Half of all gun owners own only one or two guns, and about a third of all children are exposed to guns in their home.
Hmm. About a third of all children. What do we know about the sort of class of folks that we characterized as the super gun owners, folks that own an average of 17 guns, which of course means many of them own many, many, many more guns. A few of them probably own fewer guns. But what do we know about this class of folks who own lots of guns?
So we don't actually know that much about them from the survey data that we've analyzed so far. I assume some of them are gun collectors, many of whom may own guns that have been in collections for years. We could delve deeper into those data, but at this point, it's just one point on the curve.
Right, right. I want to ask you about the total number of guns. You know, mm-hmm. in my conversation with Maura Healey, I threw out the number that's been widely circulated, that there are 300 million guns around America. Your study actually found that there were 265 million guns. So that's fewer. Were you surprised by that at all? Or have we just been wrong about that 300 million figure?
So I think we've been wrong about the 300 million. Now, there's some uncertainty around any estimate that you give. And we would say that there are between 240 and 280 million guns in this country in civilian hands. The 300 million statistic was based on a survey that we had a role in back 10 years ago, at a time when calling people up on the phone and asking them questions, which was the way that the 94 survey was done as well, no longer got as good a representative sample of adults as we feel the current methods we use today do.
I see.
part because people started to use cell phones and didn't have landlines any longer.
Yeah. As we mentioned, the last major survey of gun ownership in the U.S. was done back in 1994. Why did you do this survey? What were the big questions that you were hoping to answer?
So there are a lot of questions. One is, well, today compared to 20 years ago, how many people own guns? How many guns do they own? How are they distributed geographically across demographic characteristics? And other, how often are they stolen? So one of the findings from our survey is there are about 300,000 to 600,000 guns stolen every year. Where do people obtain their guns? Do they purchase them? Do they inherit them? And other questions not released in the current survey, but stuff that we are really interested in pursuing, has to do with, do people get background checks when they get their guns?
Right.
Does it depend on where they get their guns? How do they store them? Does it matter if their kids live in a home with them?
It's interesting. Now, you're a scholar. The data obviously come without a point of view. We're in the middle of a very sort of fierce debate, as we just heard, talking to the Attorney General. Does this study provide any ammunition, unfortunate choice of words, I guess, to the debate for or against the need for more gun control, more stringent gun control laws?
So, you know, the way that I view it is that all data are neutral and that you can make you make better decisions when they're informed by not by opinions, but by hard empirical facts. What we have found in the study that's been released is that there are millions and millions of guns in civilian hands. 265 million is our best guess. One out of three homes have guns. One out of five adult Americans have guns. And in order to do something about the toll of lethal firearm violence in this country, which claims more lives among children and young adults than anything but motor vehicles, and is one of the 10 leading causes of death, you have to start out with the basic building blocks. You wouldn't think about trying to reduce lung cancer without knowing a lot about who has cigarettes, who smokes them, how many, how much does it cost to purchase them, and so on. And so this is sort of the first step in a contemporary estimate.
There's an interesting fact in there. You found that the total number of female gun owners is increasing. Is that significant, and do we know what explains that?
So the number of female gun owners as a proportion of the adult female population is slightly higher, but not tremendously so. But what we know among women as well as among men is that the kind of guns that people own today are much more likely to be handguns than they were in the past. And they're more likely to be owned for protection against strangers. Today, roughly 70% of gun owners say that they have a gun primarily for protection against people. Hmm. Back in 94, it was less than 50%. Hmm.
If not for protection, why would someone have a gun?
For hunting, for target shooting, for that sort of thing. And so the decline in hunting may well contribute to that. But the fear and the fear-mongering the organizations like the NRA have been peddling may well contribute to this disproportionate rise in handgun ownership and ownership for protection.
All right. Well, Dr. Matt Miller is a co-author of a new survey by Harvard and Northeastern Universities on gun ownership in the U.S. You can find a link to more information about the study at radioboston.org. And Matt Miller, thank you very much for coming in. We're very grateful.
Thank you.
Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, it's sports with Bill Littlefield as the Red Sox head toward the postseason. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.